Roses.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Life, Art, Being, Integrative Arts Festival, taking place July 28th to August 5th at various locations around Portland. The Life, Art, Being, Integrative Arts Festival will include workshops, panel discussions, and performances about somatic, expressive, deep ecology, and community building, creative, and ecological practices. Again, that's the Life, Art, Being, Integrative Arts Festival taking place July 28th to August 5th at various locations around Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag Fuzzy Boo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have Fuzzy Boo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/fuzzyboo.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs, on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio broadcast program in the country. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. I'm your host tonight, Cheryl Green. Our engineer is Aaron. Tonight, I'm playing an episode from my podcast for you. I'm talking with Disability Visibility Project founder Alice Wong. Our topic is, what makes a good radio voice and how our definitions of good often exclude disabled people. This episode is transcribed into a screen reader accessible PDF. You can find the transcript linked on the show page. This is part two in a series that I'm doing about voice. Part one was on a feminist response to how we criticize people, mostly cis women, for using a creaky voice or vocal fry, which no, is not a voice disorder or a disability. And we do explain why it's not a disorder or disability in the episode with linguist and speech-language pathology professor Jeff Kahn. You can find that on KBOO's Bread and Roses from April 7th, 2017. Even though creaky voice isn't a disability on its own, people find ways to insult that speaking style and describe it as inferior to basically the voice style I'm using now. As Jeff perfectly puts it, protests against creaky voice are usually some vague ableist, racist, classist note that boils down to voice wrong. Add this one to the list of many ways we gatekeep each other by falling into the trap of viewing some kinds of communication as naturally superior to others. Check it out. This episode story started for me a few years ago when I was talking to a friend with multiple disabilities, including an accent in his speech from having a severe traumatic brain injury as a child. He wanted to be a performer, but he assured me no one with a voice like that could ever be acceptable in music. I introduced him to Crip Hop Nation, and specifically Leroy Moore's voice, and my friend was pretty floored. Will you be accepted in mainstream big money music industry? Probably not yet. Can you make a fantastic album, sell it, and gain adoring fans? You bet. Here's Leroy on the air from May 2005.
What you about to hear is not corporate media or a reality show. No! What's up, everybody? My name is Leroy Moore. This is Pushing Limits on KPFA 94.1 FM Berkeley.
As I moved from podcasting into producing for community radio, I observed more and more conversations with people about who should and should not be allowed on the air. It often came down to how beautiful someone's voice is. Beauty, pleasantness, goodness, these are subjective. Yet when it comes to gatekeeping who gets to present in the media, these qualities seem to be treated like they're objective truths that will, or at least should, ring true for everyone. I asked some of my friends a series of questions. The first was what they thought made a good radio voice.
To me, a good radio voice is about timing, probably more than tone. I really like to listen to someone who has a sense that they're someone who's fun to listen to.
A good radio voice is someone that's easy to understand and is articulate, doesn't talk too fast or go too slow or too softly.
Sounds interested, connected, feels a bit intimate as if it's talking to me.
I think a good radio voice is one that is easy to understand for me and clear.
A good voice is one that is true to the person. If you ever watch a lot of TED Talks or listen to NPR a lot, you'll notice a lot of the presenters tend to have the same kind of cadence when they speak, or they go for their specific kind of radio voice. And it's a very artificial kind of a sound, and I'm not sure that that works necessarily well for everyone.
This is not scientific research. In fact, all these voice memos came to me via a request on my personal Facebook. And that means that, though you maybe can't tell, most of the people who responded are disabled. Why does that matter? Although I'm super interested in what any podcast and radio consumers think, actually disabled people are rarely asked their opinions about media representation, even if the representation is about disability. So I prioritize disabled people's responses here because I can. Here's me reading a tiny excerpt from Alice Wong's article called Diversifying Radio with Disabled Voices on Transom. Quote, like all cultural institutions, radio enforces normalcy. This normalcy is centered on the ability to hear and speak, quote-unquote, well. With the exception of a few radio shows by disabled people, e.g. Pushing Limits on KPFA, Disability Matters on Voice America, and podcasts, you don't hear a lot of people that sound different due to disability on public radio, aside from Diane Rehm, end quote.
I remember Diane Rehm had a Diane Rehm show.
I do know of two people who I've heard on the radio, Diane Rehm with NPR, and then Robert Kennedy Jr.
And here's Alice Wong.
I can't do that, so you're very talented.
Okay, sorry. That probably didn't seem related to talking about Diane Rehm. Alice and I have corresponded online for a couple years, but this interview was the first time to actually talk to each other. Clearly, we have an intense interest in common, and she wanted to make sure that got acknowledged right away before we got to the other topic I called her about, which is quote-unquote good radio voices.
My name is Alice Wong. I'm the founder of the Disability Project. It's a community partnership with StoryCorps, which is a national story nonprofit. And we collect the stories of people with disabilities. And the DVP is also an online community that creates, shares, and amplifies disability story and culture.
To me, Alice's voice, her very presence on the airwaves, is the model of what radio can be. After the meowing and introduction, I asked her if she feels that radio excludes people who have disabilities that affect their voices.
The radio is still very isolated, especially public media. This idea of storytelling and structure and sound, maybe it's intentional, but if it's not intentional, then they do exclude all kinds of voices.
So that's a great point to bring up. Is it intentional or not? Either way, it's exclusionary.
Yeah, there's this weird sense of, radio, it should be easy for listeners, But my thought is, let's have listeners challenge. Right? I mean, that's kind of another way to push the media forward. It's, our classes enable us in terms of like language, lack of accent. I wrote a manifesto about this. I really want to publish in a mainstream publication that people really read. And I was really motivated by another manifesto by Al Munson, diversity of people of color in radio. And I thought there should be a simpler one about disabled people. So his manifesto kind of inspired my manifesto. But the reason why I did, in terms of why we need more voices, is that we don't think about diversity of radio in terms of the kinds of sounds we hear, in terms of voices. You and I and other media makers really need to get our fingers into the larger pause, splash around. I think disabled voices are not related to this really for podcasting, especially if they're doing the podcasting themselves. So I think that's a great thing about podcasting is just do it yourselves. I think that there's nobody stopping you, and it's relatively easy for most people to do this. Again, be mindful of the privilege of the digital divide. There's no exist. But I do think radio, I think disabled voices are excluded. You and I cannot name five people that have distinctly disabled voices. However, we want to define that. I think, just like any other person, disabled people have hearing privilege and voice privilege, right? I mean, for people with speech disabilities, I would be really curious what their thoughts are on radio.
What I would think would make a good voice for a radio talk show host, it would be somebody who actually cares about the subject that they are talking about and will focus on the same subject. Don't go off on a tangent of some other kind of subject.
Deep and sonorous strikes my inner ear. Also, resonant voices are also very high for credibility as well. But voice goes much deeper to the character of the voice and the intonation.
So you said you've been a guest on several podcasts. Have you ever been on a podcast that was run, or a radio show run by another disabled person?
Oh, yes, once. There was a radio station in New York City that was created by disabled people.
Was it the largest minority?
Yes. So that was great.
Yeah. Does it feel different to be interviewed by them?
You know what was interesting? They asked me whether I was wearing my mask during the interview. And I took it off, actually, because I think they wanted a clearer recording. It's interesting.
Do you ever hear voices that sound at all like yours, aside from yours, on the radio?
Well, definitely not on public media. I think other than maybe Diane Reed with her show, even though she's retired now, I remember her voice is very distinctive. And she used to get, I think, complaints about her voice because of her neurological condition.
Remember how I mentioned the creaky voice or vocal fry episode from April? Go there, or really anywhere, any search engine will take you to find no end of people complaining that voice celebrities, podcasters, and radio hosts should definitely not be ruining the airwaves by broadcasting the utter offensiveness that is creak and defiling the spoken word with their vocal cord vibrations. But anyway, here's a clip that Diane Rehm posted on YouTube through The Diane Rehm Show, where she gives the name of the neurological condition Alice mentioned, and also a treatment that she gets for it. If you're squeamish about or triggered by those kinds of descriptions, fear not. I cut out the description of the condition and the medical procedure she gets.
I have adductor spasmodic dysphonia the last time I had the injection in September. I had waited for a full 9 months, and my voice sounded terrible. So this time I'm going after 4.5 months, which is going to be just fine. It's already beginning to go, and I can feel it beginning to go. It gets breaks in the words. That's how I know it's starting to go. Shortly after the injection, when it finally comes back, the voice is very smooth and doesn't have those cracks in it. But right now I'm beginning to feel that strain.
Diane Rehm is not the only one who gets attacked for having that particular voice. Spasmodic dysphonia is so misunderstood that a lot of people with it don't get diagnosed for a really long time. While they're in the process, everyone around them, including doctors sometimes, is telling them to just relax, just calm down, just take some allergy medications, just do some vocal warm-ups, just. It's all code for fix your voice because it sounds wrong. Women, your voice must be smooth and pleasing, or you should be fired. This is the daily reality of people whose bodies, minds, or voices aren't compliant with these completely arbitrary expectations that people have decided are actually rules.
I think there's an episode of Radio Lab where they featured some disabled people or this American Life. But in terms of consistent, regular voices on radio, I don't think I've heard of people like myself. And that to me is a difference. Rather than these like singular guests like on a very special episode, right? I want to hear hosts. I want to hear regulars. That's a risk. Right by radio stations, right? Like, in terms of listeners. But I guess that's why, independent being is so important.
It's interesting that you call it a risk, because I think, yeah, financially it's a risk. But is it that people don't want to work too hard, or is it that people are ableist?
It's probably a combination.
Part of it's probably just all the same reasons that people with disabilities have a hard time getting hired places, or I guess they think that that's not something people want to hear, which is depressing.
I have heard people on a podcast with a disability, but it was a disability-specific podcast.
I think there's a cultural bias in favor of people who don't sound like they have a disability when they speak, and that bias leads people to not seek out hosts who have disabilities when they speak. I imagine some people have been disempowered from pursuing a career in voice acting because of a disability when they speak.
I think we all want information to flow easily. We live in an era where does such fetish that everyday jumps easily to us. This is where at a larger theme is that people with disabilities have been resisted in society. Like we are outside of the door. So we're constantly jabbing, you know, pushing the edges. And I think that's where, in terms of media, we are kind of challenging the norms just by existing with our own lives.
Yes. At the UCLA Disability Studies Conference, Karen Nakamura did a keynote. And they just kept saying the word non-compliant over and over. And everyone was like cheering. And it's one thing to be called non-compliant in terms of you didn't do your rehab. But just instead of it being this disciplining thing that's coming from non-disabled people to be like, I'm owning it. My body, my mind, my voice, what I say is non-compliant. What do you think about that? What do you think about just kind of reveling in non-compliance?
Mm-hmm. It's taken me a while. I mean, when I first started wearing this mask for long-term in public, you know, I was embarrassed. There are people who don't understand me, and I have to repeat myself again and again. And there's, you know, internalized ableism working here. And, you know, it's taken me a while to retrain, you know, this part. I used to take pride in my voice before I wore this mask and my voice privilege. And now I just love this other dimension to my disability as a part of this long evolution of where I am. And it's been really cool. It's very illuminating in terms of how I feel about myself and my interactions with other people. So it's taught me a lot. I do think that good is such a voting term, and I think that's the power or the magic of disabled people to really, I guess, change or make it more elastic. You know, like when we talk about good, what do we really mean? I think that's amazing. Exciting.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about disability culture, or what you and I call crib culture. We're constantly trying to, you know, just redefining or pulling at the edges.
Well, and you're asked to be, like this example you gave about switching to wearing the mask in public, you're the one who had to do the work to get used to the mask and to get over a sense of shame and, oh goodness, I'm the one in the mask. And if you can come to this place where you're like, I'm the one in the mask, then we can expect that other people can. Like, I hear you talk about it in these positive terms of this evolution and growing your curiosity around it and that's what disabled people do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're out here doing it, but media, mainstream media, and even independent media is still not willing to go there for the most part. And then they blame us. Well, but you don't have a good radio voice. But here you are doing all this work to find the wonderfulness in your voice, and they're not joining you for the ride.
So I do think every opportunity when I do get these interview requests by, like, you know, the autism people, as journalists, all that stuff, do the whole, like, 101 students, you know. But sometimes, you know, I see it as an investment. is a planting seeds, these little seeds of disability culture all over the place. Even though I feel like I'm repeating myself, you and I, you know, we're ready to move beyond, but I constantly have to remind myself, this is still really due to so many people. Burnout is a real issue. Sometimes I do wonder, why should I educate people all the time? Especially when it feels like folks like you, me, Leroy, have been at this for so long. I really feel that there's so many amazing people in our community that deserve much more, you know, recognition, and we're not getting. So those are tensions I feel all the time.
When I do something with another disabled person, or I'm sharing something from another disabled person, it just doesn't get any traction.
You know, that's a hustle in terms of getting our stuff out there. And then balancing that with our own integrity and our own kind of, you know, standards. What are we willing to do for recovery? I try not to pick myself out too much at the same time, you know, it's like sometimes I definitely toot my own horn, because if we don't toot our own horn, nobody's gonna do it for us. And we're still at that place in our community in terms of disabled media majors. I think we're still at that place where the hustle and the struggle is real. And we have to fight in these bigger, you know, groups like the Mighty, you know, that somehow speaks for us.
Ugh, the Mighty.
Yeah, things like that where most not the people think that's the source. I think it's so much dissemination. That is a disability issue. But it's all like, you know, aggregated stuff. And it doesn't really highlight like work by disabled people.
Yeah, and it passively reinforces the idea that your voice isn't needed. We've got it. We don't need you.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, I guess also like, do we have to follow that ball in terms of creating our own media model? It's like, I wonder, are there other ways to do this? Like, do we have to follow this capitalist model? Right. And sometimes it feels like maybe we are, but we're chasing the wrong path. So, you know, with the DVP stuff, I refuse to bottle tests for now. And, you know, what I do on the Facebook group is very much informally by kind of, you know, media little hub where I try to, you know, I like folks that I care about. Again, that's a group. That's a Facebook group. One of thousands that, you know, it's not self-sustaining.
Capitalism is a big problem in how we got to this place where we expect every ease of information flow and everything has to be fast and smooth. And not only does your work have to be done fast and smooth, but your voice has to, and your video has to, and everything just has to be efficient and perfect. And I find that so many people just accept that. Like, yeah, no, that's good. And that's not good. And then the second you put something that is so clearly celebrating disability out there, the response is, that's nice. I mean, nobody's perfect. And so you do get out there, but there's this caveat around you that isn't that nice and that was good enough.
I think we're still under this thundercloud of inspiration board. And we gotta dodge it. And I think that's where we post stuff and it falls outside of the realm of inspiration board. People just aren't, they aren't used to it. This narrative. This is the work. This is the work.
If you're just tuning in, this is Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Cheryl Green, and I'm talking to Alice Wong about the impact it has on all of us when we exclude disabled voices from radio.
You produced and were featured in this radio documentary piece on making contact.
Yeah, I did. This was really fun. It was something I did just to, you know, push myself and to learn new skills. And they had a storytelling fellowship, and each fellow creates their own radio story. And I very much wanted to use this opportunity to feature disabled people. To me, the joy was really being able to commit to the Bay Area disability community in terms of that people who use personal assistance and getting really like first person perspective and really being intersectional and a lot of, you know, people of color, queer disabled people. And that to me was no kind of my goal. So yeah, as a documentarian of sorts. That was a one-time thing. And, you know, I wrote the transit blog about my experience during that fellowship.
Was anybody weird with you about your voice?
Yeah, not really. I think that's what I really appreciate. And I was nervous because, you know, my interpreter was not disabled and she was paired with me and I wasn't sure. And then even in the recording process, when we're in the field, you know, I did assistance. And she was great about that. So the thing that I was really curious and nervous about, and I wanted to learn more about, it was really that took both, you know, the actual physicality of creating radio. And I really realized that there were a lot of physical barriers, but I think it was great to be able to record. You know, I really hoped that as people listen to it, that somehow it might lead to other opportunities to create more radio stories. But I've not heard from anybody, not even my local, you know, radio. And I was like, yeah, I guess maybe I hopes, too much I hopes. But I really thought it was a really great example of what I could do.
When you say high hopes, are you referring to that your hopes were too high for, like, you know, your work, or your hopes were too high that you thought non-disabled people would be like,
the latter. In terms of even getting a response, you know, mostly, you know, Bay Area, there's so many public media people. And I did wish that being dress-up was one way to really be in their space and overly sparse of it. But it never really materialized. But I'm happy it's out there, and it's a thing that I always have, that I always share. But like you said, it just never dropped its trash. Which, even despite being a quote-unquote mainstream, somewhat prestigious place. But, yeah. Keep up with it.
Going back to Making Contact for a minute, the first storytelling fellow they had was Latif McLeod, who uses a speech-generating device. He types in a message, and his iPad speaks it out. You can hear Latif and his friend April Bryant using speech-generating devices in a Making Contact episode from October 2014 called Voice Recognition. Remember those comments at the beginning about opinions of what makes a good radio voice? I'll admit my friends are a cool, non-compliant bunch. Several of them focused on the attitude, vibe, or style of the radio voice, not the voice itself. I was surprised, but then I wasn't. Of course, when you ask Crips what makes a good voice to listen to, they're going to say, "Do I like that person? Yes, I like their voice." After everyone sent me their first response, I sent them this question. Do you think someone with a disability that affects their voice could have a good radio voice?
I have a disability affecting my voice. And yes, it's been more difficult. I believe that people with vocal cord dysfunction as a disability or other disability affecting speech could be a good radio person. You need to have training, absolutely. And I certainly hope that's true for me.
If they want to be a radio host, then they should be a radio host. So, yeah, I certainly think they can.
I think that people with disabilities that affect their voice should be on the radio. I think that we have an idea of what is a default good voice, and that is an able-bodied one that's pleasant and articulate. And if we only have certain voices on the radio, we're basically not allowing the voice of disabled people to be heard, and that is an othering that I don't think that we should do, so I say absolutely.
And of course, a very interesting twist came in.
I think to have folks that on the radio that their voice is impaired is very difficult. Such as, I have a brain injury, so my thought process is already skewed and gets confused easily. And if I have to listen to someone who is stumbling and stammering, like I do with aphasia, it's very difficult for me to stay on track. I hate denying somebody what they want to do, but it's something that I just can't do. I don't like my answer, but that's my answer.
This is something that comes up constantly in disability community, and it should. That one person's access might pose a barrier for someone else's. But this last person's comment is precisely why I transcribe every episode I do. The transcripts are for anyone. But my main audience is deaf and hard of hearing folks, and anyone with a language or cognitive impairment that makes it too difficult to follow just by listening. How often do media makers reflect on who is granted access to their content and who is excluded from it?
You know, when I started the Disability Visibility Project, because it's an oral history project, I did get a few emails saying, why did you choose this medium? Yes, this is an office for, but I'm going to do everything I can to make it. Well, possible. I think that's a challenge of reading and podcasting.
It is. You get your oral history recordings transcribed, and so then they are accessible to anyone who's got the internet connection and can get someone to print it out. But anybody who can easily access the written word most podcasts and radio shows I encounter don't transcribe.
Yeah, that's the thing. For me and other podcasts out there, we can really set the tone. I've been a guest on various podcasts. Afterwards, they're like, oh, I never thought about X, Y, Z. You know, in terms of whatever I say.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, hey, you know, I'm so glad that you know, had your mom. But something to think about is that you start transcribing your podcast, because I will share your podcast to my community unless I see a transcript.
I do the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I write to filmmakers on Vimeo. Hey, I really liked your video. I'll share it if you caption it.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, someone goes, wow, what a cool idea. And they'll caption the one that I liked, or maybe, you know, two.
Right.
If we can't even get people to commit to basic things like access, it's no surprise we can't get people to commit to things like having people with voices that reflect disability or like a deaf accent or anything like that to cherish those in audio or visual mediums.
And to have them on regularly. You know, not just as guests, but the actual reporters, the editors behind in front of the microphone. You know, I think a lot of disabled podcasters are very privileged. Some people have reached out to me to say, hey, share my podcast on the DDP Facebook group. I'm like, is it transcribed? And if it isn't, I'm done. They get the same response that a lot of doctors get the most here, right? Like, oh, I don't have the resources. We're only a two-person crew. I understand that, but you know, I'm trying to hold myself accountable to what I share. It's hard.
It is hard, yeah. And it is real that it can be expensive, but I think if you can't afford to make your stuff accessible, then the price that you pay is that your content won't be shared in these certain areas. So I never call somebody and tell them to quit podcasting, but I tell them, no, I won't share your episode. The Disability Visibility Project, I know one of the many reasons it exists is to get narratives from disability community and disability culture out there to enrich all of society. Mm-hmm. If disabled voices are passively left out or intentionally excluded, mm-hmm. what are we missing? What are we denied?
I think we're denied the rich variation in our bodies, but the way we think, the way we express ourselves. That is a huge loss in terms of disability. Not only our point of view, there's a famous quote, you know, the medium is the message. And I feel like disabled voices are media themselves, in addition to my messages. It's critical that both get out there. We don't have to separate them.
Yeah. Or clean them up, so to speak.
Exactly. We don't have to make it palatable.
No, because you can expand your definition of what's palatable rather than just be rigid and say, no, I just don't like that, that's wrong, and therefore everything they say is not worth listening to.
Yeah. People with the power to edit, there's so many internal biases are unreflexive. It's just, they just look granted.
It's sort of related to what we talked about earlier. Do you go for being the token, or do you stick with not being let in at all?
Exactly. That's for every disabled people, that's actual creators. They're so important.
Yeah.
Culture change is really hard. Culture change sometimes at a glacial pace, especially in our society that is still deeply entrenched in ableism. You know, I think we're still taking a long way to go, but I think we're at a point now to where there's a huge class of disabled people doing great work. Could that be visible in a way there's never been before? Thanks to social media, in terms of identity and pride. So to me, you know, I do look forward to the future. And I think we're going to get there.
We are not tolerant of anything that deviates from the norm. And I think that that is particularly true for girls and women. I think it's particularly true for minorities, people of color, and certainly people with disabilities are marginalized and kept out of the mainstream. It's unfortunate that people have to work that hard and have so few opportunities in order to be seen. We have got to start normalizing humanity.
I think people that have disabilities should be doing radio broadcasting, definitely. I think it would be different, and people want to hear different kinds of people's voices, I guess, because everyone doesn't want the same thing. People with disabilities have stuff, cool stuff to say as well, and might even be cooler.
It makes me feel good all over to hear them.
Oh, you're going to get there. We will absolutely get there.
I highly, highly, highly recommend you check out the Disability Visibility Project oral history recordings through StoryCorps. You will hear a huge range of voices, identities, representations, and really some sheer wonderfulness from disability culture and community, especially amplifying the voices of disabled people of color. Alice conducts some of the interviews, so you can hear her much more as well. Since the recordings are done in StoryCorps booths, they sound better than what I was able to capture with Alice over Skype. And every posted audio clip has a text transcript.
All right. Well, that was 45 minutes. So we are here live in the studio to give you a little bit of wrap up and conversation. This is Cheryl, and I am here with
Kiersey Coleman.
Thanks for joining me tonight, Kiersey. I want to say also, you know, it's radio, so only I can see Kiersey, and Kiersey, you're the only one who can see me. I'm wearing my Disability Visibility Project t-shirt that says, "Our existence is resistance." And I didn't even remember that we were doing this tonight and when I put this shirt on. So anyway, Alice talked about resisting and how just being a disabled person in an ableist society just comes with so much resistance. And yeah, so I've got my shirt. Everybody should get a little Disability Visibility Project t-shirt to celebrate one of our small victories recently. Yeah. Should we talk about it?
Sure.
Do you want to start? You want me to start?
Can you start?
You bet. Okay, so the one of the small victories, and yes, it's not a huge victory, but we don't need to, you know, rain on any parades. The small victory being that the three Republicans, one man and two women, voted no and did not let the trash fire continue on trying to burn Medicaid and Medicare and basically either institutionalize or kill disabled people who receive benefits. So we're celebrating today, right?
Yeah. I'm really relieved, yeah. So,
what's that?
I'm relieved.
Yeah. And you were saying earlier, Kiersey, how you had faith that this was going to happen and that you were relieved, and people were telling you that that wasn't even necessarily the right attitude.
It's always important to have faith, especially if you're part of a minority community. We know that we are resilient and we will figure out a way, but it's always nice when you get to take a rest for a little bit But, you know, our work is never done.
Yes. And this was, I mean, this was a tremendous amount of work. I don't know if everybody realizes how many people from Proud Disability Community and from ADAPT, the grassroots organization ADAPT, mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone recognizes how hard people worked and how many arrests there were and mm-hmm. just, I mean, round-the-clock efforts. Was mm-hmm. there anybody who really stood out to you in those protests?
So I'm new to the disability community and the disability activist community. I think Carrie Ann Lucas's voice really stands out to me. And it's really nice to get to know these faces and people that actually, you know, paved the way for me. As a woman with a disability.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Carrie Ann is on the scene. And there's a group here in town in Portland that's doing a ton of this work, the Coverage Defense Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done anything with them?
I've been in a couple conversations with them over the phone and a couple conferences, but I haven't been as active as maybe some other committee members.
Yeah, I was active only at the very beginning. I mm-hmm. did some video recordings and I closed captioned the video recordings, and they were those you know, our coverage stories, our Medicaid stories, our Medicare mm-hmm. stories, really presenting that honest personal narrative about what it means to be able to be a contributing, productive mm-hmm. person. When you get these benefits, it's not mooching, it's what allows you to live. It's mm-hmm. dignity, autonomy, interdependence, having a job in some cases.
Yeah. It's such a complicated web to navigate. That's why I have trouble when people say mooching, because it's a lot of work to navigate all these systems and some very grateful, but sometimes I wish it was a bit easier.
Oh yeah, I mean mm-hmm. absolutely, there's the issue that you deserve the right to have this, but then mm-hmm. there's the other issue of it is so hard to actually get everything in order and process it and stay on top of it.
Yeah. And it's interesting talking to some of my other friends with disabilities who maybe aren't as familiar with the movements. Like, I don't know if they understand that they deserve all these things.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's like this, it's a fundamental issue.
Yeah.
People sitting around talking about healthcare, and not having the conversation of, wait, let's just go back to the level of basic humanity.
You deserve, you know, to have a nice house and you know, have good care presented to you, and you be able deserve to go to the doctor when you're not feeling well, and to be heard by your doctor, and to be taken care of. And a lot of times, people might not always think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, if you feel like you don't have to think about it, you don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And okay, can I plug now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there is one of the many, many wonderful people who got arrested in these protests is Stephanie Woodward, who mm-hmm. is at the, I have letters in my head and they're in the wrong order. The Center for Disability Rights in New York State. Okay, I bring that up because hopefully I'm going to meet Stephanie in Rochester next week. Yes, and yeah. a lot of other people. So what I'm doing in Rochester next week, I hate traveling, I hate leaving the house, but I'm going to do this because I made a short documentary film that Kiersey starred in, Kiersey Coleman sitting next to me, and it was for the Free Our People Film Contest and Festival. Mm-hmm. with the basic idea being that we need to all acknowledge there is some systemic bias going on. This is what mm-hmm. you're talking about, Kiersey. It's not mm-hmm. just about healthcare and benefits. It's about this basic idea that our society seems to think some people deserve and some people don't deserve. And that's mm-hmm. a systemic institutional bias. And so this was a film contest exploring that. You make a 5 to 7 minute short film about why we should not institutionalize disabled people, and we won first place. So,
yay!
Yeah, so I'm going to Rochester. I'm sorry that I cannot take you and Eric Ferguson and Yuli Arakelian with me, but that's it's a small festival.
It's so beautiful. It's a really beautiful film, and
And I'm grateful that I got to film you in it, and that we got to talk about just. Like we were saying, like basic humanity mm-hmm. of people, all people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my. I don't do the marches. This is my contribution. Mm. Do you ever go to the marches?
I did.
Oh yeah.
When the president was elected, mm. I did. I went to some of the marches. Mm-hmm.
That's a worthy thing to go march for. So so today it was just a short conversation because we were sort of filling in after my previously aired episode with Alice. And so we're going to wrap up here. I'm so grateful that you came in tonight for this and that we could celebrate Alice Wong and all the great activism to try to keep healthcare and keep disabled people alive and out of institutions.
Yeah.
You can follow the Coverage Defense Committee, the local Portland group on Facebook. You should also check out Musings of an Angry Black Woman blog by Anita Cameron, mm-hmm. who's a longtime ADAPT member, and it's Women with a Y, WOMYN.
Oh.
Yeah. that's a great one if you want to get engaged with what ADAPT is up to and
some nice intersectionality there.
Yes, absolutely, yes. With Anita Cameron, yes. Mm-hmm. So you have been listening this evening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland. Many thanks to our engineer, Jenna Yokoyama, and our evening news and public affairs director, Zelos Marchant. We always welcome new collective members, and if you are interested in joining us as a producer, host, or engineer, no experience necessary, please call KBOO's volunteer coordinator. I said call, but I'm going to give you an email address. So I got new bifocals, you guys, and I don't know how to use them. Okay, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, volunteer@kboo.org, or reach out to us at breadandroses@kboo.org. You can connect with us on the website, kboo.fm/breadandroses. You can like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses. And we're on Twitter @BreadRosesRadio. We're going to go out tonight listening to Mississippi Misfit by Mindy Lind. Have a great night, everyone.
Small time and queen, where's the You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7 o'clock. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is always looking for ways people can work with us and support us. KBOO has a wish list, and we'd love help getting some of those items donated. Some things on our list include a color printer, digital recorders, a pop-up canopy, dishwashing detergent, brooms and mops, or services like roofing,